Raja, a king. Mejan, fit for sacrifice. Pachun, animals. Bane, in the forest. Yavat, so much as. Artam, required. Alam,
not more than that.
Lubdaha, being greedy. Hanyat,
one may kill.
Iti,
thus.
Niham yate,
it is regulated.
So translation, if a king is too attracted to eating flesh, he may, according to the directions of the revealed scriptures on sacrificial performances, go to the forest and kill some animals that are recommended for killing. One is not allowed to kill animals unnecessarily or without restrictions. The Vedas regulate animal killing to stop the extravagance of foolish men influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The question may be raised, why a living being should be restricted in sense gratification? If a king, to learn how to kill, may go to the forest and kill animals, why should a living entity who has been given senses not be allowed unrestricted sense gratification? At the present moment, this argument is put forward even by so-called swamis and yogis who publicly say that because we have senses, we must satisfy them by sense gratification. These foolish swamis and yogis, however, do not know the injunctions of the Shastras. Indeed, sometimes these rascals come out to defy the Shastras. They even publicly announce that there should be no more Shastras, no more books. Just come to me, they say, and I shall touch you and you will become immediately spiritually advanced. Nonsense, people. Because demoniac people want to be cheated, so many cheaters are present to cheat them. At the present moment in this age of Kali Yuga, the entire human society has become an assembly of cheaters and cheated. For this reason, the Vedic scriptures have given us the proper directions for sense gratification. Everyone is inclined in this age to eat meat and fish, drink liquor, and indulge in sex life. But according to the Vedic injunctions, sex is allowed only in marriage, meat eating is allowed only when the animal is killed and offered before the goddess Kali, and intoxication is allowed only in a restricted way. We'll tell you about that later. In this verse, the word niyamyate indicates that all these things, namely animal killing, intoxication, and sex, should be regulated. Regulations are meant for human beings, not for animals. The traffic regulations on the street telling people to keep to the right or to the left are meant for human beings, not for animals. If an animal violates such a law, he is never punished, but a human being is punished. The Vedas are not meant for the animals, but for the understanding of human society. A person who indiscriminately violates the rules and regulations given by the Vedas is liable to be punished. One should therefore not enjoy his senses according to his lusty desires, but should restrict himself according to the regulative principles given in the Vedas. If a king is allowed to hunt in a forest, it is not for his sense gratification. We cannot simply experiment in the art of killing. If the king, being afraid to meet rogues and thieves, kills poor animals and eats their flesh comfortably at home, he must lose his position. Because in this age, kings have such demoniac propensities, monarchy is abolished by the laws of nature in every country. People have become so degraded in this age that on the one hand, they restrict polygamy, and on the other hand, they hunt for women in so many ways. Many business concerns publicly advertise that topless girls are available in this club or in that shop. Thus, women have become instruments of sense enjoyment in modern society. The Vedas enjoin, however, that if a man has the propensity to enjoy more than one wife, as is sometimes the propensity for men in the higher social order, such as the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, and even sometimes the Shudras, he is allowed to marry more than one wife. Marriage means taking complete charge of a woman and living peacefully without debauchery. At the present moment, however, debauchery is unrestricted. Nonetheless, society makes a law that one should not marry more than one wife. This is typical of a demoniac society. There's some controversial things here. So, Tirteshu prati drishteshu ma raja me jan pashun vane yavadartam alham lubdo anyaditi niyam yate. So, Omagana chimadanda shah gananjana shalakaya chakshur meditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So, let's first analyze the Sanskrit and the verse before we go on any further into the purport. Tirteshu prati drishteshu. And then also raja me jan pashun vane. So, this Sanskrit indicates that the king is actually killing animals in two places. Tirteshu prati drishteshu means that he's in a tirtha. Tirtha, of course, means holy place. Let's analyze that word further. Tirtha literally means a crossing place, a place where you cross from one place to another. Of course, that means you cross from the material realm to the spiritual realm. Oh, Hare Krishna. Where's your good husband? You there? Okay. You're the better half. So, Tirtha basically means to cross, like a bridge or something like that. So we have these different tirthas, like Mayapur, Vrindavan, you know, Kashi, Jagannath Puri, all these different tirthas. And these tirthas are like crossing places by which you can cross from the material world to the spiritual world, which is really interesting. They're special places. This word avatara, it's taken from the same root, which means crossing down, someone who crosses down. It's interesting. Just like they had a movie called The Avatar. You heard about that before? No, you didn't hear about that.
Yeah.
But it was an accurate use of the word avatar. Avatar means to cross down, someone who comes down. Whereas in this movie, it showed just someone crossing horizontally from one body to another by use of scientific technology. Anyway, so that's what tirtha means. So in science fiction parlance, or let's say language, it's a portal. You know what a portal is? Some of you have studied science fiction. A portal means you can actually go to a place and just like zap to somewhere else in the universe. It's a portal. So, and if anyone's watched Star Trek or Star Wars or anything like that, that's a portal. So anyway, so here we're talking about a special holy place by which you can cross to the spiritual world just by being there. And in the holy places, of course, there's a covering, a thin covering of yoga maya that really keeps people from seeing the real essence of the holy place. For example, if you go to Vrindavan and you don't have spiritual vision, you'll just see a bunch of pigs and monkeys and, of course, a lot of traffic and rickshaws. Of course, it's not that the pigs and monkeys are not there and the rickshaws aren't there, but that's all you'll see if you don't have spiritual vision. That's called a veneer. Does anyone know what that word veneer means? No. Veneer means like a thin covering, like if you have cheap wood. The wood is covered with very cheap covering, so it looks like expensive wood. That's a veneer. And if you scratch it, you actually see the cheap wood underneath. It's cheap furniture. So that's what a tirtha is. It's a place that actually manifests the spiritual realm. And in those tirthas, devotional service is expanded. In other words, you get more benefit from performing devotional service in those places, like in Vrindavan, Mayapur. And also the Hare Krishna temples. So sometimes people think to be Krishna conscious, I have to run to Vrindavan or run to Mayapur. But actually, this temple is Vaikuntha. It is also a Tirtha. If everyone follows the rules and regulations, and if you have a temple where people aren't following the rules and regulation, it's a Tirtha for crows. That's what the Bhagavatam says. That place where the Supreme Lord is not glorified, that place is considered a pilgrimage place for crows. In other words, a place where crows go. I mean, for example, I'll give you an example of mundane. Tirtha is where you can cross to hell. like Disney World or something like that. That's a place of pilgrimage for crows. Anywhere where Krishna's glories are not being chanted is a place of pilgrimage for crows. And why is the word crow used? Because this is a typical Indian expression. Because in India, the crows are quite big. They're maha crows. And these crows, I've been in some places, seen these crows in India. I mean, it's just like, wow, it's almost like Jatayu or Sampati from the Ramayana. We're able to carry people away. I mean, they're very big crows. And they go immediately for the garbage. And the swans, they do the opposite. They go for the nectar. So here we find the kings performing sacrifices in order to eat meat in the holy places. So what does that mean? That they're getting more sinful reactions from doing that if they do that in a holy place. Because whenever you go to a holy place, you get more benefit, sometimes 100 or 1,000 times more benefit, and then if you commit an offense or you commit a sinful activity, you get 100 or 1,000 times more reaction. Therefore, we have statements by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that when you go to a holy place, you stay a fortnight. That means 2 weeks. Because if you stay longer than that, then you'll commit offenses. You'll take things complacently. You'll perform sinful activities, and then you'll fall down from devotional service. Actually, there's a statement by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that if someone goes to Radha Kund and they're not qualified, then it becomes Nataka Kund for them. In other words, they go to hell, which is pretty heavy. Therefore, we see sometimes many people, they run to Radha Kund and they're not qualified. They get absorbed in either sinful activities or offenses against Vaishnavas. And sometimes they offend Prabhupada, ISKCON, Srila Bhakti, Siddhanta, Saraswati Thakur. Like if you go to Radha Kund, this is actually a warning for those of you who go to Radha Kund. There are some of the Babaji's, they actually blaspheme Srila Bhakti, Siddhanta, Saraswati Thakur. This is called the anti-party, where they accuse him of saying, not being properly initiated by Guru Kishore's Babaji Maharaj, and they destroy your faith. They're very tricky. What they first say is, oh, you Hare Krishna, your followers of Bhaktivinoda Swami, Srila Prabhupada, oh, glories to Prabhupada. We appreciate very much your Krishna conscious movement. And then you let your guard down. And then after that, they inject the poison. This is a very common strategy for those who want to steal devotees from ISKCON. First, they're very cute, nice, everything with you, and you think, wow, this is just like the Hare Krishna movement. And then they poison your mind. It's like Putana. Putana came to Vrindavan, and she assumed a form that was extremely beautiful. And all the residents of Vrindavan think, wow, Lakshmi has come down, or, you know, someone's come down from the heavenly planets. Wow. And they thought nothing of letting Krishna sit on her lap, or for her to hold Krishna, and for her to give her breast milk to Krishna. They thought nothing of it. And then she did that. But fortunately, Krishna's God. You know, if it had been anyone else, it would have been curtains for them. They would have died. So Krishna just like killed her. And of course, Krishna is so merciful, he made her like his mother in the spiritual world. But we are not immune from poison. Don't try to suck Putana's breast milk, because you will die. So if you hear offenses against Vaishnava, even if you go to a holy place and you hear offenses and you don't respond to it, you're finished. So dangerous. The holy places are actually extremely dangerous. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when the devotees go, let's say to Govardhan or Radhakund, they shouldn't live at Govardhan. They should live at, shouldn't live at Radhakund, sorry. They can live at Govardhan and keep Radhakund on their heads. But what we say is fools rush in where angels fear to tread. So, you know, we find, I've had to restrict my own disciples from living at Radhakund. They said, oh, it's all so nice, you know. We say, yeah, but basically, they're naive. They don't know what's going on, you know, there's actually been dacoitry going on and shooting between the different Babaji camps. They've been actually, seriously, there's actually been like shooting with pistols between the different camps there, you know. My Babaji is better than your Babaji. Boom. Or my Babaji owns this land and your Babaji is claiming it too. Anyway. So the Tirtha is extremely a dangerous place for people who are not conscious of what they should be doing. So if a king goes to a Tirtha, performs a sacrifice where he offers or kills an animal, even a bona fide sacrifice, but if he does it for sense gratification, it's devastating for his spiritual life, or devastating for his karma. That's the first point here. And then another place the king, so there's basically two places where the king kills animals. In a holy place or in a sacrifice. And in the forest when he's practicing his martial arts, his hunting. So he goes to the forest and practices the martial arts, kills the animals, eats the animals, but he's only allowed to eat the animals that happen to be killed because he's practicing. Not that he kills more animals because he wants to eat more animals, and in the name of practicing. You understand? So the motivation has to be to practice. I mean, sometimes even the Mahabharata, you have Arjuna and Krishna killing like so many animals, but they're not interested in eating them. For example, in the Mahabharata, you have the story of the Kandava Prast, the Kandava forest, where Agnidev came to Krishna and Arjuna, and he said to them, please let me burn down the Kandava forest. Okay. And he said, the reason for this is I need to eat the Kandava forest because I have indigestion. Why did Agnidev have indigestion? Because there was some king who had performed some sacrifice, pouring ghee into the fire continually for 12 years. You know, so if you eat ghee for 12 years, you're going to be extremely sick. I mean, even if you eat ghee for an hour, you know, you keep pouring, even if you drink one glass of ghee. So Agnidev has his limits of digestion too. So for 12 years, it was just too much. And so he said, I need the herbs in this forest. Just like you have herbalists who can give you different herbs. So Agnidev needed to eat the herbs in the Kandava forest. But there was a problem. Because in that Kandava forest, there were entities that were even protected by Indra. And Indra, when he wanted to protect the entities, he created rainfall so it would stop the fire. Okay, so it was a problem. Every time Agnidev tried to eat, which means burn down the herbs and the trees in the forest, then Indra would shower rain, and then the forest fire would be put out. And especially one of Indra's best friends, Takshaka, was there. You know, the snake bird that finally killed Maharaj Parikshit or bit Maharaj Parikshit. So, therefore, Agni asked the help of Krishna and Arjuna and even gave Krishna and Arjuna different weapons, you know, like the Sudarshan Chakra, which is originally Krishna's weapon. And he gave Arjuna the Gandiva bow. That's how Arjuna got the Gandiva bow, according to the Mahabharata. Although it's eternally Arjuna's weapon, but this is just a pastime. And so what happened is that the Kandava forest was burnt down, but Krishna and Arjuna had to just prevent all the animals and all the different creatures from escaping. And even the wife and children of Takshaka were killed in that forest during the conflagration during the fire. And that's one reason why Tokshik was actually very angry at Arjuna. And later on, he took that anger out on Maharaj Parikshit. This is actually a story from the Mahabharata. Very interesting story. So in this case, there was killing of animals. It was completely allowed. It was actually dharmic. But it wasn't done to eat the meat. So it's a question of the motivation on the part of Kshatriyas. Now, nowadays, of course, Kshatriyas are not allowed to do that. Of course, in the Kali Yuga, several things are prohibited. One thing, of course, is Ashwamedha Gomedha. Ashwamedha means killing of the horse, and Gomedha means killing of the cow. Because in the previous ages, when you had these sacrifices, the horse or the cow was rejuvenated immediately and got a better body from the sacrifice. So it was a test of the mantras of the sacrifice. Nowadays, nobody can chant these mantras properly. So if you have a sacrifice, there's no rejuvenation and you have to suffer the karmic reactions for killing the cow or the horse. So it's extremely prohibited. There's other things that are prohibited too, such as a brother having a child by his brother's wife. That's one thing that's prohibited. It's also prohibited to take sannyas. So you may ask, why am I doing it? What am I doing here? I'm breaking the Vedic injunctions. Well, preaching or the preaching of Krishna consciousness takes precedence over that. So as Prabhupada said, utility is the principle. So the sannyas is meant for preaching. It's not that by taking sannyas in Kali Yuga, you necessarily become more Krishna conscious. Sometimes you become less Krishna conscious when you take sannyas because you eat all the Mahaprasadam. And Prabhupada said many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasadam. So just like when I first took sannyas, I thought, this is great. I get to eat all the Mahaprasadam. Then I got sick and I discovered it wasn't such a good idea. So, but sannyas in and of itself doesn't make you Krishna conscious. What makes you Krishna conscious is being attached to the holy names. Kiva Vipra, Kiva Nyasi, Shudra Kenanari, Ye Krishna Tapaveta, Se Guru Hoy. If you know the science of Krishna, then that's the important thing. It doesn't matter, whether you're a sannyasi, grahastha, vanaprastha, or whatever, or even brahmachari. If you know the science of Krishna and you practice chanting the holy names purely, you go back to God, or a lady, or a man. It's, you know, everything's just equal. There's a level playing field. You understand? Level playing field. That means nobody has a special handicap. Anyway, that's a sports analogy. That everybody has equal opportunity to be Krishna conscious. Doesn't matter. Men, women, children, everybody. Kali Yuga is like that. So anyway, so these things are prohibited. So a king is not allowed to do these sacrifices in Kali Yuga, nor is a king allowed to go hunting and practice animal killing or whatever with his pistols. Nowadays, the hunters, of course, it's not even like practicing like the Kshatriyas used to do. They have their high-powered rifles. You understand? High-powered rifles with this telescopic sight. Even they have infrared equipment. Infrared means they can see the animal or see the thing at night. And they are able to fire directly. I mean, this is not Kshatriya stuff. Kshatriya is supposed to be heroic, not a coward, hiding behind some bushes, killing an animal. Anyway. So that's the first point here, that the king is doing these things. If he's too attracted to doing these things, then he falls down and becomes influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. Therefore, these things are prohibited in Kali Yuga. That's the first point. The second point is brought up by Srila Prabhupada in the purport, that why should we be restricted in sense gratification? I mean, why do we have these ridiculous four regulated principles? Isn't it interfering with the progress of our Krishna conscious movement if we didn't have the four regulated principles? Why don't we pick some regulated principles that were easier to keep? Like, you know, don't eat Brussels sprouts or something like that. I mean, I like Brussels sprouts, but, you know, giving them up is not the end of the world for me. Giving up that, or, you know, or therefore one should not bungee jump or something, you know, something that's a little easier to give up. Well, the reason we have these four, there's several reasons we have these four regulative principles. One reason is, according to the arrangement between Maharaj, Pariksit, and Kali, where these four regulative principles are broken, Kali is there, or where gold is hoarded. I mean, hoarded for sense gratification. So that's one reason. As soon as the regulative principles are broken, then you have a manifestation of Kali. Kali means quarrel. Kali means all the bad qualities, you know, Kaler, Doshanade, Rajanachye, Go Mahadvina, Manda Sumanda Mantio, Manda Bhagya Padrata. Kali also means destroying your health, destroying the principles of religiosity, cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. All these things are manifestations of Kali. That's one reason. Another reason for the particular regulated principles, let's go over them one by one. No intoxication. We mentioned yesterday intoxication means an illusion within an illusion, or a dream within a dream within a dream within a dream. Prabhupada said that. And it makes you crazy. And it makes you do harmful things for your health. Just like nowadays, I was just reading the other day, it's going to be obligatory to have in your car an alcohol detector in the future. In other words, it's going to be built into your car, and before you drive, you have to breathe on it. And if you have alcohol in your breath, the car won't start. I mean, that's how unregulated people are. So many people die every year from alcohol-related causes, and particularly driving a car under the influence of alcohol. I was just reading this magazine from a Norwegian Airlines, and it says that at every moment there's 33,000 people in Norway on the road who are drunk. Every moment. I mean, it's 24 hours. I mean, it's an average, obviously. Usually not at 8 o'clock in the morning. And there's more at night. They're taking an average. So it's dangerous for the health. And of course, drinking, whether it's marijuana or alcohol or heroin or whatever, it destroys brain cells in the body. Every gulp of alcohol you take, it destroys thousands or millions of brain cells. Put you in delusion. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons. Put you in the mode of ignorance. So it's really counterproductive for Krishna consciousness. And it's also sinful. Like if a Brahmin drinks alcohol, the reaction is you get to meet with the wonderful Yamadutas in your next life. And you get to drink molten lead or metal. The Yamadutas force it down your throat. So it's a good reason for giving up drinking, isn't it? A lot of good reasons. So, okay, that's first regulative principle. Pretty bad. And then intoxication, you know, illicit sex also puts you in a crazy state of mind, depletes the bodily resources, puts you in the mode of ignorance. Also, you get a reaction from the Yamadutas. It's against the regulative principle. Obviously, it's against the Manusamhita injunctions. And it creates disease. You know, uncleanliness comes from that. You know, people complain nowadays, why is this AIDS so prominent? Well, one big reason, apart from needles that are actually contaminated, which is part of intoxication anyway, is that people are having illicit sex, exchanging bodily fluids. I mean, what do you think? Don't you think diseases are going to be spread that way? You know, if I sneeze on you, you get worried about it. Like if I'm sitting here and I have some flu and I go, you! And if my bodily fluids go out there, you're going to go, oh my God, Maharaj, why don't you cover your mouth when you sneeze? So it just creates disease everywhere. I mean, just like when I was preaching at the university one time, I had a big sign to attract people. I said, Hare Krishna's find the cure to AIDS. And then in little letters, under that, abstinence. And I said, abstinence makes the heart grow fonder. You know, so people would come up and say, Hare Krishna is fonder. Oh wow, you Hare Krishnas are great. And they come up and they read abstinence. What? What are you talking about? How's this? You know, you're crazy. But at least I attracted them, and then I could have a discussion with them afterwards. So, you know, people are so addicted to this. And also, you know, illicit sex or the so-called romance is like taking cocaine, according to the doctors, not according to me. According to your CAT scan, you know, or MRI, sorry. That it's just like, it has the same results. So therefore it bewilders you more. So illicit sex, intoxication, we covered already. Gambling, we see from Yudhisthira Maharaj's example. It's like a fever that you just, I've gone to Las Vegas, not to gamble, but to preach Krishna consciousness. You know, I walked through the airport. Recently I was passing through the airport in Las Vegas, and they have all these one-armed bandits. You know what a one-armed bandit is? They even call the machine that. You know, the slot machine. Where you put some money in and you pull down a lever. They even call it a bandit. You know what a bandit is? A dacoit. Or a thief. And people are still putting their money. And every once in a while it rewards you a little bit. And you think, oh, I've won. But then 99 times out of 100 you haven't won. And you find people dying, basically. Like that. Video games are similar. Many people have died playing video games. Because they just sit there and they forget to eat and drink and sleep, and eventually they die. Anyway, so it's another type of intoxication, this gambling. So, and you see Yudhisthira Maharaj gambled his own wife away. Can you imagine how crazy? But this is not unusual. When people become enamored in a fever like that, in a place like Las Vegas, they gamble their car away, so they have to... Everything. They even right outside of the casinos, they have a notary public. You know what a notary public is? That means a person who notarizes a car title. So you leave the casino, you know, as you're gambling, it's a person who can actually say that yes, you're the person who you say you are, so you can sell your car to someone else. So they sell their car and they're left with nothing. Basically, the clothes on their back, or maybe they were in a barrel when they... It's a funny story, but... Anyway, so it's crazy, this gambling. You shouldn't gamble to make money for the Hare Krishna temple either. It's not allowed. So anyway, so and then the final one is, of course, eating meat, or as Prabhupada says, animal killing. So animal killing is prohibited for obvious reasons. You're harming other living entities. Either, as we mentioned yesterday, directly killing the animal yourself, or indirectly. I mean, people make this argument to me all the time when I'm out preaching. I don't kill animals. I just buy from the supermarket. And I say, but you paid someone, you know, maybe 3 or 4 steps away. You paid someone to kill the animal. Isn't that the same? If I pay someone to kill a human being... It's first degree murder, or whether I kill the human being, it's first degree murder. Yeah, I plan it out. You know, it's planned out. First degree is planned out murder. Second and third degree murder is when, you know, it just happens on the spur of the moment or by accident. You're driving your car and you look at your mobile phone, you kill someone. That's actually the type of murder. So it's a very sinful thing, harming another living entity. And then you will also be harmed as many, animals that you kill. I probably gave the example that if someone eats a chicken, they'll become a chicken. Or you gave the example of this KFC place. You have KFC here? You do. Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC. It's all over the world. If someone... I've seen them here. Anyway, everywhere in the world, even in India. That the person who was the founder acharya of this particular... organization, you know, they've killed chickens, millions, billions of chickens killed, then that person will have to take a chicken birth for every chicken that's ever sold in any of his stores from now until eternity. So, that's pretty bad. And then if you kill a cow, I mean, we all know you take birth for as many hairs are on that cow. That's pretty bad. So one should be very careful not to indirectly or directly kill animals. We talked about this yesterday. I'm not going to get into all the details about milk and everything like that because it's a little controversial. So, therefore, there's reasons for restricting these things. But in order to restrict these things, we have to remain in devotee association. Because if you're hanging out or associating with people who are doing these things, then you'll become attracted to doing those things. If you go to a bar, like Prabhupada, it's interesting, Prabhupada one time said, if you go to Lanka, you'll become Ravana. So if you go to a bar, I mean, ultimately, you're going to start to drink. I mean, of course, you could go to a bar to preach Krishna consciousness. One time, there was a devotee, and he fell down from Krishna consciousness, was playing a piano in a bar. You know, piano bar. You have them here? I'm sure you do. And so I went there to preach to him. You know, so I walk in. Of course, I wore Western clothes, you know. So it wouldn't be too shocking for the other people in the bar. And I sat down while he was playing the piano and the girls were sitting on the piano, you know, in the bars. And he's playing and the girls are, you know, making their faces at him. And then he finishes his set, you know, and then he looks up and he sees, Maharaj, what are you doing here? I've come to save you. Prabhupada one time said, we've come to save you and we've come to shave you. Is funny. Anyway, so we stay away from places of intoxication. And anyway, we don't even engage in bona fide intoxication, which is in the original Vedic sacrifices, they would offer liquor or something like that. There'd be a time to drink the liquor. So that's what Prabhupada mentions. There's actually some allowance, but though there's not that allowance in Kali Yuga. We can get intoxicated by chanting the holy names, which is sort of nice. Anyway, so these things are restricted, and we're supposed to be human beings. That's what Prabhupada said. And the final point here is the actual controversial point where Prabhupada seems to be recommending polygamy, right? If you read here, it says, society makes a law that one should not marry more than one wife. This is typical of demoniac society. In other words, does Prabhupada want people to have more than one wife is the question. And by Prabhupada's own actions, we see that he didn't. As I mentioned the story yesterday, that when one devotee was asking Prabhupada if he could have another wife, Prabhupada said, our business is to restrict sex life and your business is to increase it. So he said, if you do that, you can't do it within our society. So Prabhupada really didn't want that there. Also because of the Vedic injunction that in Kali Yuga, if one can maintain one wife, one is a great hero. You know, we give them a medal, we glorify him, we have a special appreciation dinner for him once a year. If you can maintain, no, that's what the Vedas say. One is a great hero. It's not possible because people are so damn lusty in Kali Yuga. However, Prabhupada is criticizing the governmental laws because the governmental laws allow something a lot worse than polygamy, which is basically slavery of women. Women are turned into objects of enjoyment. I mean, we do not want to be treated as an object or as a machine. I mean, nobody here wants that, do you? You know, someone just treats you as a machine. Or, you know, the temple president says, get to work, do RT. And they said, can I talk to you? Shut up. We want to be treated as persons. So women in modern society, to a large extent, of course, I mean, many, many ladies, it's actually sort of a mixed bag in modern society. Many ladies are becoming, let's say, prime ministers or in government high positions. At the same time, you have this disparity between women on the lower rung who are treated like dogs. And like in India, there's so many so much information about that, you know, rapes and the attitude of many people in India is extremely, or like we were talking about yesterday in Nigeria, isn't it, with this group? Can you imagine people treating girls like that? I mean, I can't imagine something like that. It's just like, even the animals don't do that. It's just something not even subhuman. It's something I mean, something I can't even find words for. Even Ravana didn't do that. I mean, Ravana kidnapped women, but they were happy to have him because he was so damn handsome. I mean, any of you ladies, if Ravana kidnapped you, you'd give up your husbands in a heartbeat because he's so rich, handsome. You know, you could fly around in his Pushpaka Vimana. You wouldn't want that? Any jewelry that you could get? Let me offer you more. So, hey, you with thousands of maidservants bowing down to you. And now she's into it. But, no, obviously she's a chaste person. But, I mean, it's described that Ravana couldn't force himself upon any of these ladies because he was cursed. He did it once, and then he was cursed by Nalakuvara, who happened. Anyway, the whole story about that. But, you know, they're treating women less than Ravana. And there's black markets and selling women around the world. It's hellish. And so the government, you know, if we had some good governments, they would stop that stuff. They would stop this, you know, these clubs that we're talking about. And interestingly enough, they would stop divorce. Then you may say, divorce? What's wrong with divorce? You know, if you don't like someone, just get rid of them, trade them in for a new one. Like a car, you know, you car, you old car. And divorce is polygamy. But it's what we call serial polygamy. There's two words, serial and parallel. Parallel means at the same time. Serial means one after the other. Serial polygamy is actually irresponsible because you just keep dumping people one after the other. Of course, sometimes the wife makes out pretty well. I was just reading about some billionaire who got divorced, and his wife got several billion dollars from him. Russian, right? I mean, so, well, that's a good idea to get divorced then. 4.5 million. $4.5 million. Wow, we got to go preach to her. Do you have her email address? You know, we could definitely use that money in the Christian consciousness movement. So I mean, but this is crazy. This is crazy because basically it means illicit sex and not taking care of the person that you were supposed to take care of. In most cases, I mean, 4.5 billion, you did take care of her, you know, that's fine. But in most cases, it means not being responsible. So in the Vedic system, if one wanted to have more than one wife, they had to take responsibility for all of them, not just keep dumping them one after the other. You understand? That's why Prabhupada says, this law is demoniac. Prohibiting polygamy. In other words, if the government, we're not talking about the Krishna consciousness movement, but if the government actually wanted to do away with debauchery, one of the things it should do is it should make laws that if one wants to have more than one wife, one has to take care of each one has to give each one a house, jewelry, saris. I think most of you men have lost interest in more than one wife after this discussion. And you know, all the amenities. In other words, it's pretty expensive. So people are just doing things in an unrestricted way. Of course, I'm not recommending more than one wife because we're supposed to gradually reduce things. The perfect example for chastity and devotion and sticking with one wife is Lord Ramchandra, Ekapatni Vrata. When Lord Ramchandra was on the planet, many people wanted to marry him. And it wasn't unheard of. Even, let's tell one interesting story, we'll finish the class with that. When Sita Devi was kidnapped, Sita Devi actually wasn't kidnapped by Ravana, it was Maya Sita. And Maya Sita spent some time with Lord Ram, then was kidnapped by Ravana, really wasn't abused by Ravana, she wasn't sexually assaulted by him because he couldn't do that. And later on, she saw Ram again before she went back with Agni. And she fell in love. She actually fell in love with Ram. And she said, Ram, you know, I've been acting as your wife or making believe I was your wife for a long period of time. So I want to marry you. And he said, no, ekapat nivrata. And she kept begging, and he said, all right, next time when I incarnate, I'll take another wife, and you can get married to me. So to make a long story short, I don't know if it's a short story, but it's a pretty long story anyway, that once upon a time, Lakshmi left Narayan. The reason she left is she got real upset with him because he was kicked in the chest by Brigamuni. And she said, you know, how can you put up with this? So I'm going away for a while. So anyway, so she left him, went down to the earth planet. Then Lord Narayan was looking for Lakshmi everywhere, came down to the earth planet, finally found this Maya Sita, who happened to be a queen or a princess at that time. And he wanted to marry her because he didn't have Lakshmi. He didn't have enough money to marry her. So then he had to borrow money. This story's in the Puranas. He had to borrow money from Kuvera, who's the treasurer. And finally was able to marry her. When he married her, he was very happy going on the honeymoon. And then what happened is the real Lakshmi showed up and said, what are you doing with this other lady? And they started a fight with each other. That is, Lakshmi and Maya Sita started a fight with each other. And Lord Narayan, he started to escape, turned himself into a deity. And then Lakshmi and Maya Sita turned themselves into deities, and that's Sriyambhu and Lord Venkateshwara. Anyway, that's the story in brief. So then what happened? Then he had two wives. And then Krishna, of course, had 16,108 wives. But he also gave each and every one of them a palace, children, servants, and everything like that. So I don't think anyone's capable of that. So basically, ekapatnivrata for everyone in Kali Yuga. We don't follow Krishna's example, we follow Ram's example. Ram is Maryada Purushottam. He's the best example of ethics, morality, and good behavior. Krishna is not such a good example. Ram is our example. Krishna is God. They're both God. I understand that. But Ram sets an example how we should act in human society. So anyway, so this is the thing about polygamy. There have been some debates amongst members of our society whether we should have polygamy in the Krishna consciousness movement. But Prabhupada definitely did not want it in the movement. He just definitely didn't want it and would create the social disorder. Okay, any other questions or any questions and comments? Yeah, no questions.
Controversial question.
Okay, controversial.
We see in the world that women outnumber the men.
Yes.
And in ISKCON, Prabhupada said every woman must get a husband.
Yes.
And in ISKCON, so many are brahmacharis.
Yes.
And still so many women outnumber the men.
Yeah.
So in that context, polygamy can be the best option, since every woman must get a husband.
You want to be the first candidate?
Because when we're being this issue, it really came up. It was a fight. People were giving so much opinions. If Papa said everybody must get a husband, and the women outnumber the men,
yeah,
and among the men, we feel many don't want to get married. So how will everybody women have a husband if there's no polygamy?
I mean, there's many, many issues. First of all, many don't get married, and then they discover when they're 50 they do want to get married. That's another problem. Sometimes, I don't know if I should be controversial, but anyway, I will. I'm always controversial. So sometimes gurus, in order to save their disciples from marriage, take their disciples away from a particular place and send them somewhere else. But it's artificial. Because then the desire is in the heart. The way to cure the heart desire is to purify your heart. Not like Prabhupada in New York, for example, one time the brahmacharis wouldn't let the women chant japa in the temple room. In time of japa they were kicked out of the temple room. And then Prabhupada was informed about this and he says, but you're living in the New York City, there's so many women around. What are you going to do? Better you go to the forest. He said, but that's not a good idea because you'll stop preaching Krishna consciousness. So the women are devotees. I mean, that's why we have this thing, you see the ladies as mothers. Like that. So it's not that, I mean, and if someone really has some desire in their hearts, some specific need, let them get married peacefully and be honest about it. Prabhupada said it may be better not to get married, but one should not be a bachelor daddy, Prabhupada said. If you understand what that means. So the first point is, there may be too much preaching against marriage in the Krishna consciousness movement. I mean, first of all, if we want to really have a successful movement, sociologically, we have to concentrate on householders and children. And if you look at the sociology of religions, how religions spread, the most successful religions have special facilities. They take care of the children. The first thing is education for the children. If you don't take care of the children, there's no future to a spiritual movement. This is a sociological fact. We may think we're transcendental to that because we just don't like children. You know. But what's wrong with children? You know, you were a child once. Is there anyone here in the room who didn't have a child's body? Raise your hand if you were born like Sukadev Goswami. No, I was a little baby once, you know, and my mother still thinks I am. So sociologically, I mean, this is a thing for our temples. We should make arrangements for the children, like they come on Sunday, take care of the children. Because if you take care of the children, you'll get the parents. If you get the parents, then you have some future to the movement. You get money. You know, people say, well, there's so much problem with money in the Krishna conscious movement. You know, we don't have enough money. Well, if you're just depending on the brahmacharis to go out with their buckets and collect money, you may not have enough money. That may be a very short-lived economic base for your movement. But if you look at these other successful religious societies, then they emphasize the grahasthas and the children. And long-term varnashram, that's what it means. And if we put too much stress on brahmachari life, when most people are not really qualified to remain as such, then what we're going to end up with is a short-lived movement, you know, people going in like a revolving door, people coming in and leaving. We're interested, you know, I'm interested in keeping people chanting Hare Krishna for their whole lives in a very stable, happy situation. That's my personal interest. You know, slow and steady wins the race, like the tortoise racing against the rabbit or the hare. That's the point. I mean, there's so many shooting stars. You know, people go, phew, what happened to so-and-so? Well, he just ran away with a girl that he was preaching to. Oh, he didn't want to get married. You know, I see this all the time. I see this all the time, and it's a disaster in our movement. So that's the first point. That's the first point. And another point is, yes, in our movement, there are more ladies than men, at least in the Western world. Let's talk about the Western world. I mean, I'll tell you a funny story. I was in our temple in Tirupati, and there's no women's ashram there. So I asked the temple president, a good friend of mine, why is there no women in the temple? And he said, if we had brahmacharinis in the temple, we wouldn't have any brahmacharis. I thought for a minute, you know, it may be true. So that may also be very artificial. Maybe very artificial. I mean, in order, if you're like that Rishi Sringa in the Ramayana, you know, Rishi Sringa was a person who never saw a woman his whole life until the first woman came up and she was dressed as a man and he didn't recognize it was a woman and then he just like got dragged away. Then you're going to be in trouble. He didn't even see his mother because he didn't, you know, his mother was a deer. His father wouldn't let any women near. His father was this typical agitated guy who wouldn't let any women near in the whole forest. He had a sign at the edge of the forest, no women, no female deer anymore, no female cockroaches, you know, everybody. It was like your ideal brahmachari ashram. Ideal, you know, so. You know, didn't even see a female fish in the river. And so, you know, finally when this girl came to lure him away, he couldn't tell the difference. He said, wow, what a good-looking brahmachari. And she came up to him and said, he said, please accept my obeisances, my dear brahmachari. And she said, in my country, we don't offer obeisances, we just hug. And he's like, well, this is a better type of obeisance. And then she was able to lead him away. This is a story in the Ramayana. I'm not just making this up. She was able to lead him away into the kingdom of Romapad. It means the hairy-footed man. Hairy-footed king. Anyway, that's what Romapad means. But he's a famous person, so we can have a Romapad Swami in our movement because he's a famous pure devotee king. And then later on he performed the Putra Kameshti ceremony for Dasarath. So Dasarath. You know. But the point is, you know, if you have that much separation, when you prohibit something, you make it more attractive too. You said, women are Maya, women are bad. Oh. Sounds interesting. just like recently the GBC has passed some injunctions against a particular sannyasi in the movement, Vidyananda Maharaj, you know, they restricted him because of something called Krishna West, right? And now everybody in the movement's interested. What is Krishna, wherever I go, people say, what is Krishna West? Explain it to me. Wow, it sounds really interesting. Wonderful, wow, because it's been prohibited. So when you talk negatively about something, you make it more attractive to people. I mean, Hare Krishna. So that's the first point. Okay, let's get to the second point. Yes, and still there are more women than men. Prabhupada also said that we can have a situation, or as he mentioned the Catholics, where the women are protected. Because women need to be protected. So the point is the women are protected, can be protected by a society, which we're doing a very bad job of it right now. They're protecting women in our Krishna consciousness movement. But Prabhupada wanted that. He can be protected by the father, the son, the husband. I mean, that's the Vedic system. So if the women are protected by Srila Prabhupada's movement, Prabhupada is ultimately our, you know, like father, grandfather, great-grandfather. There should be some arrangement in our society. So the ladies who either are not married because they chose not to get married. I mean, some ladies choose not to get married. Some ladies were in a situation where the husband was physically beating them and killing them. Some ladies, you know, the husband's no longer there for one reason or other. I mean, some ladies, the husband ran away with some other girl. I mean, that happened. You can't, I mean, it's not the lady's fault. Just like you have this great devotee in our movement, Narayani, whose husband ran away with someone. Is it her fault? And what is she supposed to do? Look for another husband? No. You know, whatever reason, then the lady has to be in a protected situation. That's all. That's the principle is protection. So, Prabhupada did not want one man to have many wives because it just wouldn't work out in our society. And also, it would cause us to be hellishly criticized. Can you imagine? I mean, in America, you have some of the deviant Mormon groups where they still practice polygamy. And the government sometimes raids their ashrams or whatever you may call it. And it's just like people don't respect it in modern society. I mean, maybe if you're preaching in Saudi Arabia, you know, if that happens to be your Prabhupada today, you go to Saudi Arabia and you're a member of the royal family and you decide to become a Hare Krishna devotee. You know. Maybe they'll appreciate Krishna consciousness, I don't know. But we're not in Saudi Arabia, and I think would look really bad in a newspaper here, wouldn't it? Like, what's your main newspaper here? It's Ljubljana. What? The Daily News, whatever. I mean, it would be in all the newspapers in your supermarkets too, you know, where they give you the news of all the movie stars and everything. You have that here? No, you don't. You don't have tabloids or anything? Yeah, you do. Every country they do because the people are into these romantic things. So, in the Hare Krishna's temple president has 10 wives. Don't worry.
I think it's out. think it's all about culture.
What?
I think it's all about culture.
Yeah.
In Africa, it doesn't matter.
In what?
In Africa, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, in Africa.
Nobody cares because we are really polygamy. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, I mean, I would say possibly in Africa it could be instituted like that. But it has to be responsible. It can't be like, for example, in Fiji, you have the native Fijians, they can have more than one wife. But they don't take responsibility, the chiefs. So you're not allowed to ask a person who their father is. If you're in school, you're a teacher in school, let's say I'm teaching in fourth grade, and I said, little Johnny there, and I said, Johnny, who's your father? That's prohibited. That's prohibited. So if you have a particular place where the culture is like that, then it has to be done very responsibly. But it cannot be done in the Western world. And even in India, it's against the law, except for the Muslim families. There are a lot of Muslim people allowed to have four wives. So we have to be very careful about it. And then also we're an international movement. You know, imagine, even if in Africa, let's say we have a devotee who marries 20 wives, you know, in Africa, and it's accepted there in the culture, and he comes to Mayapur with his 20 wives. I mean, how will it be seen by the other devotees? Plus, we don't even have enough facility for even me to visit Mayapur. You know, if I want to go to Mayapur during the festival, at least I have a friend I can stay at Keshav Madhava's flat, right? Otherwise, you know, I'd be on the street, you know, living somewhere else. So can you imagine a guy comes with 20 wives? Whoa. Where are you going to stay during the Hare Krishna festival? I may might be a little impractical, right?
I have a question there. Like my father has his wives.
That's fine.
And he's a kami. If he wants to become a devotee tomorrow, can we stay because we're polygamy?
No. That's the culture. It's fine. That's fine. I mean, I think that's wonderful. And he should bring each and every one of the wives to Krishna consciousness. Get them all initiated. I mean, that's a particular culture. I think that's fine. That's fine. But once, let's say someone joins and they're a brahmachari and they say want to take six wives, I don't think that should be in our movement. I mean, what your father did was dharmic according to his culture, which is wonderful. And we have no problem, and he's probably protecting them too, which is wonderful. There's no problem with that. He's responsible. However, yeah, if he comes to Mayapur with the six wives. I think it'd be accepted, but have to be some explanation. Can you imagine, like after Bangalarti, they do all these announcements. We'd like to welcome, Krishnadas Prabhu and his wife Devi, Devi 1, Devi 2, Devi 3. Davey 4, Davey 5, and Davey 6. Yeah, it'd be something that's all right, but it would be hard. You know, the adjustment period would be a little interesting to adjust for it. But I have no problems with it per se. But not in Slovenia. Not in Slovenia. It depends. It's like adjusting your preaching according to the culture that you're in. I think, that's the most important point. That's what this whole Krishna West thing is about, is adapting your presentation according to the culture you're in. If you do that, then you'll make it more acceptable. Just like, my godbrother, who was great, Bhakti Tirthamars, he was expert in that. You know, he went to Africa dressed as an African prince. People accepted him. It was wonderful. And what's that?
He took chieftaincy to preach to the...
Yeah, he became a chief, and which is wonderful. But it's interesting that many of the members, the conservative members of the GBC, didn't understand that, and they criticized. They didn't understand the need to adapt according to the culture, to present Krishna consciousness according to the culture. And that's one of the reasons why we're not being as productive, preaching-wise, as we are today. As we should be today, because we stick to certain aspects of our culture or the external aspects, let's say, that may be interfering with our spreading Krishna consciousness, maybe put up too many barriers to people joining the Krishna consciousness movement. I mean, for example, in America, I don't know if it's true here in Slovenia, like if you have the women walk around in public with their heads covered, then everyone thinks they're Muslims. I mean, it's just like, wow, you know, it's just like, you have to understand that. So therefore, you know, I've told the ladies in our temples in America that I preach in, don't cover your heads when you're in public, please. Because, you know, people think it's a certain impression that people get. Anyway, I think we have to end now. Yes, one more question.
Comment and a question. If a woman should be allowed to walk in public with her head not covered, she should also be allowed to walk in public with her head covered if she chooses to.
She should be allowed to, but I'm talking about impressions in preaching Krishna consciousness. It's not a question of allowed or not allowed. It's a question of, I don't want to be seen as a radical Muslim. I mean, in America, there's that impression. I mean, rightly or wrongly, I'm not criticizing Muslims. I have many friends who are Muslims, and I like them, and I respect their devotion. But in America, people immediately respond in a negative way. So that, there's a point about preaching. I don't know about this country. I'm not commenting on Slovenia. I'm commenting on America. And it's immediately people go, maybe it's a terrorist. Yeah. I'm not saying it's right. All I'm saying is that that's the impression. Do we want to be seen like that? And I personally, you know, if I'm going out in some preaching program or something like that, I don't want the people with me to be seen like that. Like that, you know. I mean, I adjust certain things so that we can be seen in a better light. I mean, hey, I don't know if I should tell this story. Anyway, so you see my V-bag. My V-bag is brown. You know why it's brown instead of saffron? Because most of the SEF saffron V-bags. Because one time I was in an airplane, and the steward, that means a male stewardess, in case you haven't figured it out, saw that I had a pink purse. And he asked me for a date. He said, "What are you doing tonight?" And I said, "I'm busy." So I changed my beak. It's a true story. I changed my beak bag to brown, so it's a more of a male color. So it's not a prohibition. I can still use a saffron V-bag, but I'm scared. So sometimes you got to adjust some external things in keeping with the culture. I mean, it's just practical, isn't it? I mean, Bhakti Chirthabharaj was expert in that. He had this Lord Nrsingadev cane, which was so beautiful, and it really was like a king's cane, you know, like a staff of a king. And I loved it, and people didn't appreciate it. They criticized him and made him give it up, which was ridiculous, because he was trying to preach Krishna consciousness. Utility is the principle, as Prabhupada said, right? So this is very important, and we have to, you know, we don't change our principles, we don't change the practices, but we can change some of the packaging. You know, if I can make a million people Krishna conscious, I would dress, you know, whatever way. I would put a burqa on if I could make people Krishna. That won't work, but anyway. You understand?
No, what's a burqa?
A burqa is the type of Muslim dress where the ladies can just see. Like that. I mean, Utility is the principle, isn't it? Because it doesn't change our it doesn't change our philosophy for me to wear a burqa. I mean, it's not a good idea. I know that. But utility is the principle. We have to feel compassion and be ready to do what is necessary without losing our purity, without losing our principles, to bring people to Prabhupada's lotus feet and to get them to chant Hare Krishna. That's the point. So, any other what was the controversial thing you were going to ask?
You spoke strongly against the divorce.
Against divorce, yeah. That's another thing. I mean, we're living in a real world, you know. Sometimes it happens. Divorce happens, and then sometimes people do get remarried. I mean, there's principles, and there's also adjustment of principles according to time, place, and circumstance. Prabhupada did speak very strongly against divorce. Prabhupada did speak. I mean, I'm just saying that. He spoke very strongly, but you know, there's extenuating circumstances. I mean, let's say that your husband is taking a gun to your head every night. You know, obviously, get the hell out of there. No, I've seen circumstances like that. So, I mean, obviously, you know, we don't want to just apply the rule blindly. Okay, I think we have to take prasadam, or else the devotees will get very upset with us. All glories to His divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda.